Welcome back, listeners, to another week of Popcorn. This week's episode is entitled Musicians in Movies, The Good, The Bad, and The Cameos. Originally, I thought it might just be a shorter episode where I would highlight some of the interesting cameos from the 2000s era films, but then I decided it would be fun to expound on the long history of musicians turned actors. Maybe not the first ever, but definitely one of the most notable crossover transitions that I can think back to was Elvis Presley. Elvis, often referred to as the King of Rock and Roll, was obviously a wildly successful musician, but he also had, I want to say, about 20 movies or so by the time he finished his film career. Nowadays, there's quite a few people whose acting credits far exceed that, but it seemed like a lot at the time. So that pattern continued with the likes of Will Smith, also very notably Mark Wahlberg, Ice Cube, Mandy Moore, Harry Styles, and it seems almost like a rite of passage for the divas in the pop industry to have their own films. Some did just one movie, like Christina Aguilera or Britney Spears. Some did a couple, like Lady Gaga and Beyoncé. But then you also had Cher and Madonna, both with several films apiece. I would say Cher's films have a better track record than Madonna's, but they both had some interesting projects. But crossing over from music into movies is not solely a pop industry thing. Faith Hill and Tim McGraw, who are married in real life and country music stars, starred alongside each other in the Western series that was a prequel to Yellowstone, called 1883. It was a Paramount Plus exclusive, and actually it's one of my favorite Western TV shows. They were excellent in that, which was very surprising to me. There have been a number of rap artists who've also been in cameos, like Nicki Minaj and The Other Woman, as well as a number of other ones I'm going to mention in the 2000s era. It seemed like this was a common trend in films in the 2000s, especially in the genre that got heavily parodied, and that was teen movies. Like I said, it seemed like it was happening a lot back then. Maya was in the movie Chicago in 2002. Kelly Rowland was in Freddy vs. Jason in 2003. Macy Gray was in Training Day. Cisco and Vitamin C were in the film Get Over It in 2003. Then you had Blink-182, who was in American Pie. Ashanti in John Tucker Must Die in 2006. Andre 3000 from Outkast in Four Brothers in 2005. And even Nelly in The Longest Yard remake in 2005. Most of these, the singer was playing a character and a part of the movie, but you also had cameo roles like Sugar Ray and Scooby-Doo, where they had a simple cameo and they were singing. But nonetheless, most of these are super random. They were one-off, and then the person never really went on to act again. There were a couple, however, that went on to have pretty successful film careers. For the sake of time, I decided not to do a best and a worst. I thought I would just highlight the ones I think did it really well, but also because it's a matter of opinion. For example, Mariah Carey. The woman is an unmatched singing talent, for sure, hands down. But unfortunately, I do not think that that skill or that talent transferred to her acting chops at all. But again, matter of opinion. So now, moving on, I would say the singers who've had the most films that I've enjoyed and ended up buying were actually Jennifer Lopez and Justin Timberlake. Justin Timberlake's music career began as a member of the 1990s boy band NSYNC. He then went on to have a solo career and continued on to have a rather successful film career. So of all the films in his acting credit, I'm first going to mention the film called Alpha Dog. Alpha Dog came out in 2006, was rated R, and had a runtime of 2 hours. This is a film I actually remembered seeing in the theater. I was not at all expecting to get as emotional as I did, however, watching the film. And even though it's a very, very good movie, it's one of the very, very few that I would say I give the rating very good, but I would not watch again. And unfortunately, the reason for that is I do find the film very disturbing. Justin plays a guy named Frankie. Frankie's in a crew, or in a group, with a bunch of guys, and the leader is Johnny Truelove. Johnny's played by Emile Hirsch. So Johnny and his friends, there's this typical teen shenanigans, drinking, partying, staying out late, but Johnny's also a drug dealer. Johnny and a character named Jake, played by Ben Foster, have a falling out. After the falling out, Johnny and his friends, including Frankie, kidnap Jake's brother, who's 15 years old. The brother's name is Zach, and Zach develops sort of a friendship with Frankie, played by Justin. So even though it was one that I may not personally watch again, I think his performance here was really good, and it was also a very strong dramatic role. I think his acting in this movie was very good, and perhaps even his best. But my favorite movie of his is the next one that I'm going to talk about, and that's the movie called In Time. In Time is a 2011 film, rated PG-13, running 1 hour and 49 minutes. Also in the film are Amanda Seyfried and Cillian Murphy. And it's a very entertaining premise for a sci-fi. It has a very Logan's Run kind of feel, if you've seen that film. It obviously has the fantasy element. It's a bit dystopian. This one, I will admit, I'm pulling the synopsis right off of IMDb. So it says, in a future where people stop aging at 25, but are engineered to live only one more year after that, having the means to buy your way out of the situation is a shot at immortal youth. So in other words, the rich are the ones with all the money. And if you're rich, you can buy more time on your clock. If you're not, a lot of the people in poverty end up dying at 25. Justin Timberlake's character is named Will Salas, and Will Salas finds himself accused of murder and on the run with a hostage, a connection that becomes an important part of the way against the system. And as far as films with their own alternate reality and their own universe inside the movie go, this one is really cool. I also liked that it has the reverse Robin Hood theme here, because the rich are the evil in the film. So it becomes about taking away from the rich to feed the poor. Another great film of his was the Amazon original called Wonder Wheel. Now, I mentioned Wonder Wheel, the 2017 PG-13 film, in the Kate Winslet episode, because she's also in that film. And what I had liked about that one was that it had that dark side of ambition. Not so much from his character, but from Kate Winslet's. But since I did just talk about that one a couple episodes ago, I won't go too in-depth about Wonder Wheel on this episode. As far as comedies go, I really liked his 2011 film, Friends with Benefits, alongside Mila Kunis. Of course, it's totally predictable. Two friends decide to hook up with each other and think they're going to just be friends with benefits, but they end up falling in love. So it's predictable, but it's a cute one. Fun fact, Mila Kunis is married to Ashton Kutcher in real life, and Ashton Kutcher and Natalie Portman starred in a film called No Strings Attached the same year that almost had the exact same premise and, oddly enough, almost the exact film cover when it came out. I just thought that was kind of funny that there were two movies that were almost carbon copies of each other released the same year. Of the two, I liked Friends with Benefits better. He was also in an action thriller called Runner Runner. Runner Runner was a 2013 film, rated R, at 1 hour and 28 minutes. The title is a reference to a poker term. In this one, Justin Timberlake plays a broke college student who gambles to get his money for tuition. He thinks he's cracked the online poker gaming system, but he gets cheated by one of the casinos. So he decides to go meet with the big boss in person and try to make things right. But it ends up being more dangerous than he anticipated. He gets sucked in, chaos ensues. The last one that I have seen that I'm going to mention is Palmer, which was a 2021 film and it was an Apple Plus original. And in this one, he plays an ex-convict named Palmer. And I think the reason I like this one is because it has that theme that I always love, no matter where it's represented, of friendship in unlikely places. I almost always love movies or TV show that have the inclusion of either strange people that don't go together becoming friends or weird circumstances bringing people together to be friends. And in this case, he makes friends with a little boy named Sam who comes from a troubled household. His mom, played by Juno Temple, is a drug addict. She's never around. And so he ends up kind of taking this little boy under his wing. He has a recent film that's a Netflix original called Reptile that's currently in my Netflix queue. So that's what I'll be watching him in next. The other person who, in my opinion, has had the best music to film career is Jennifer Lopez. At this point in time, I would say Jennifer Lopez is probably equally known for her acting as she is for her singing. But a fact that I didn't know was that her acting actually preceded her first studio album debut. On the Six was the name of her first album, and that came out in 1999. But two of my favorite movies of hers that I was going to mention actually came out in 1997. The first movie I'm going to mention is the first movie that she was in her breakout role, which was Selena. Selena was the 1997 film, was rated PG, and ran 2 hours and 7 minutes. It's the true story biopic of the Texas-born Tejano singer Selena Quintanilla. The film depicts her humble beginnings, her life with her family, her rise to superstardom in the music industry, and her tragic death. And the thing is, I remember watching this film for the first time years and years ago and thinking, oh my god, this is so sad, I never can watch this again. But years later, I realized this is a really good movie, and so even though it's a true story and it's very sad, I do think that it was worth buying. So I caved and I bought it, and I've watched it a couple of times since then, and I do think it's a very good movie. It's held up very well. That same year, she also did a movie with Ice Cube, who's also had an interesting film career of his own. The two of them were in a campy and ridiculous film in 1997 called Anaconda. Just like it sounds, it's a creature feature 1997 PG-13 film. It ran 1 hour and 29 minutes, and it consists of them playing as members of a cast of National Geographic, trying to make a documentary film, but in the process, trying to avoid getting eaten by a giant snake. Now, I made a joke last week about Sony not having their act together because there was quite a few good movies, I felt, in the 90s that they dropped the ball on. And that was because last week we were talking about sequels to movies that were pretty big in the 90s. And a couple of those were Sony films. But I'm going to give Sony credit here because one of the main things I remember about Anaconda was the marketing. So I don't know who was doing marketing at Sony in the 1990s working on this film. But I remember the VHS cover was a holographic snake eyes. And at the bottom, the tagline, also part of the marketing team. And it said, "It will take your breath away." Totally cheesy, totally fun. Still remember that VHS cover. Still remember that tagline. And just a couple weeks ago, I gave this one a rewatch. It's still fun. And Jennifer's done a number of really cute comedies, so I won't list all of them. But I would say my favorite of her romantic comedies was probably Made in Manhattan. Made in Manhattan came out in 2002. It was a PG-13 film, and it ran an hour and 45 minutes. In the film, she plays a single mom who works at a fancy hotel in the city. She meets Christopher Marshall, played by Ralph Fiennes, and there's an instant spark. The only problem? He thinks she's the hotel's guest, not the hotel's employee. As far as romantic comedies go, this one is kind of predictable and cheesy, but it's cute. And of her more serious roles, my favorite film of hers was the film called Enough. Enough was released in 2002. It's PG-13 and had a runtime of an hour and 55 minutes. In this one, she plays a waitress named Slim. Not really sure why they decided to name the character Slim, but other than that, it's a pretty good movie. Slim meets a man she thinks is handsome and charming. So they date and get married and end up having a daughter together. But much like the Julia Roberts thriller, Sleeping with the Enemy, Slim's husband turns violent. So even though the screenplay and the storyline of the movie are fictional, it deals with subject matter or a theme that's very real, and that's domestic violence. So it shows her enduring abuse at her husband's hand and figuring out what she has to do to survive and get away from him. It's fairly predictable. It doesn't have too many surprises, but I appreciate that it's a neatly packed thriller. She has two newer projects that I'm looking forward to seeing that I haven't yet, and one of those is called The Mother. It's a Netflix original. The other is an Amazon Prime original called This Is Me Now. As I've done in previous episodes, I will share on the Instagram where to find these films. That's it for today. Until next week.